So the second half we are going to just focus purely on KP's equation. So okay, not KP's equation, KP's growth models in 1+1 dimension at late times. And we are interested in the large deviations of the heights of the KP of the growth models. So I'll describe in some models in detail, but roughly speaking, what we want to calculate is P of HT, where H is the, so you have this interface, which is growing with the height field, H of X, of course it depends on the initial condition, but so this is, I'll copy this is as a little H of X. It could be just by continuum KP's equation, or it could be discrete growth models evolving with time T. And so once you properly center and scale, so this is what I'll denote by H of T. This is like the height at the origin, properly centered and scaled. So then, I mean, what has again, you know, I mean, again, you know, this audience knows everything, that if you look at very late times, okay, so when time is much, much bigger than one, by one, I mean just the typical microscopic time scale, and very long time limit. So this actually goes into the, again, the interesting minimum distribution. So this is, you know, some function of H over 2 to the power 1/3. But this function is the, is just depends on the initial condition. So if you start from a flat initial condition, then this is the F1S. So this is the, you know, Tracy Williams GOE. I'm assuming everybody knows Tracy Williams here. And if it is droplet geometry, so this is the flat initial condition, and this is the droplet geometry, where this is the Tracy Williams GOE. But this result is valid for typical fluctuations. So if I'm plotting the P of, you know, droplet distribution of the height versus H, centered, so it's zero or something. So essentially, so on a scale of, so typically height fluctuates around its average value on a scale of order T to the 1/3. Okay, so that everybody knows, 1+1 to KPC. And the scaling function here, if I'm drawing a different color, it's actually described by the T-W distribution. So again, you know, I mean, I'm not, you know, giving reference to anybody here because, you know, everybody in, present in this room has contributed in some way or the other to this problem. And so what I'm interested in is actually not this typical. So this result is valid when H is of order T to the 1/3, typical fluctuation. So what I'm interested is in actually not typical fluctuations, but atypically large fluctuations. Which means I want to look at H of order T on both sides. I'm looking at very, you know, extreme tails of these distributions. So this is of order T, and this side is of order T also. I want to know what is the form of this distribution when I'm looking at fluctuations at very, you know, atypically large fluctuations.
Is it that you have to light
No. But I think everybody can hear me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's not a question of
you. Oh. I see. Did somebody took the microphone from here?
So you can say if you want, you want to get recorded.
You can ask.
Go on. Okay. So that's the question I'm interested. So in the large time limit. So this is the, you know, typical fluctuations. And what I'm going to, I'll tell you in a minute, and that will take most of the time, that why I'm interested in this question. So what I want to show you is that if I look at the left tail here, so this is the sort of central result. So this is time very, very large. So as I said, this is the typical fluctuations, which depends on the initial condition. And so if I, this is H of order T to the 1/3. If I look at H of order time T to the left, so negative I'm proving here my PDF. So then it has this form, exponential minus t squared into some function phi minus, this is like a typical weight function, log deviation function, which is of this form, e minus t squared. Whereas if I'm looking at h of order t, that means on this side, yeah, very extreme right here, then if we get the exponential minus t, not t squared, phi plus of h over t. And so we can actually compute these functions, rate functions explicitly for a few cases. And this is this sort of this almost ongoing work with Pierre Nebusol and Gregory Scherr. And so this is the late time behavior. And now I want to tell you that why I'm interested in this question of large deviations. And this is where this third order phase transition comes in. So,
okay. So why large deviations? So large deviations, of course, has become quite an interesting topic in statistical physics these days. But our motivation actually again comes from random matrix theory. So let me just remind you again just what I said already in my first talk. And this sort of connect up the two talks. So as I said, take, for example, for simplicity, just a GUE or GUE matrix, GUE or GUE, whatever. I mean, and so we take the probability distribution of the matrix X entries as exponential minus beta over 2 trace of X squared, where X can be real symmetric or Gaussian or complex Hermitian matrix. And this beta is the Dyson index, which is 1 or 2. Depending on GUE or GUE. Or there is another case, beta equal to 4, but let me not talk about that. So as I said in my previous talk, that the joint distribution of eigenvalues are well known. And this is given by normalization constant, exponential minus beta over 2, summation lambda I squared times lambda I minus lambda j to the power beta. And so this, as you know, this is, you can write down this as a Coulomb gas. So I can write down this as summation lambda I squared minus log of lambda I minus lambda j. So now forget about the, the quantum Fermi gas. Just think of classical particles. So I can also interpret this joint distribution as a set of classical particles on a line. So lambda 1, lambda 3, lambda n are the positions of the particles on a line. And they are subjected to a external classical potential of quadratic potential, lambda I squared. And they are repelling each other by this log interaction. So this is a two-dimensional Coulomb interaction. But of course, these guys are living on a one-dimensional line. Okay, so it's not really electrostatic potential in that sense. But so there is an, this. If you didn't have this term, then of course everybody will be centered around the origin. But there is a repulsion between the eigenvalues, which is the logarithmic interaction, which spaces them, puts them apart. And on an average, then you can you can interpret this as a e to the power as a Boltzmann factor. And the energy of this set of charges, lambda I being the position of the charge, is essentially as two parts. So there is an attractive energy due to the potential, which is trying to push them towards the center, and there's a mutual repulsion between charged particles, which tries to push them apart, and this is what is called the Dyson-Coulomb gas. Okay, and so I mentioned that so on an average, you will have the Wigner semicircular law. So this is the average density of charges. So average density of charges is just 1 over n. So I'm talking about lambda i's now instead of positions x i's, but it's the same thing. Okay. So this is the average density of states. Okay. What I'll do is I'll actually scale also here by n just for simplicity, so that all the eigenvalues are of order 1. So if I scale that way, so then my Wigner semicircular law will be exactly between root 2 and minus root 2. And so if you now look at the largest eigenvalue, so the largest eigenvalue, clearly, this is the average density of states. So if I look at the largest eigenvalue, so on an average, it will be centered around this root 2. But then, of course, it will fluctuate around this root 2. So it will have this distribution. And this is, again, the famous Tracy-Widom distribution. So you'll have root 2 plus n to the power. So the typical fluctuations here with this rescaling is actually n to the power minus 2/3. Earlier I was talking about n to the power minus 1/6 because I did not do this rescaling. But if you do this rescaling, it's the same thing exactly. Okay, divided by root 2 times this random variable. So this random variable, which is independent of n, and this is the famous Tracy-Widom distribution, is distributed by the Tracy-Widom distribution. And it depends on whether it's GOE or GV. So this chi 1, or in general it's chi beta, beta equal to 1 and 2 have a slightly different distributions. And most of you know that it satisfies a Pan-Levy 2 equation and so on. So what we know is that the PDF of this chi, so f beta of chi, so it's a complicated function, but it has its tails, which are non-Gaussian tails. So on the left side, it goes like exponential minus beta over 24. Time mod x cube, and on the right side it goes like minus 2 beta over 3 times x to the power 3 over 2. So this guy goes to plus infinity, this guy goes to minus infinity. Okay, so it has these non-asymmetric tails on both sides, and so you know everything about it. Okay, now how do you calculate this probability distribution of lambda max? Formally, so this is the cumulative distribution. What's the probability that lambda max is less than or equal to W? Since you know the joint distribution, so it's just this normalization factor, and you have to integrate out this guy, minus beta n over 2, summation lambda I square, minus whatever, log lambda I. So what you have to do is to do just a multiple integral, all going from minus infinity to W, right? That's the definition. Probability that lambda max is less than or equal to W, that means all the lambdas are less than W, and the probability of that event is just this multiple integral. So you can write down this as a ratio of two partition functions. So normalization is just the same integral with W replaced by infinity. So it's a ratio of two partition functions of this Coulomb gas, essentially. So one with a wall. So this is interpretation of this, is that you have this Coulomb gas here, but you just put in a wall at W. Okay? It's not a physical wall, it's just a computational wall. And you're asking for the probability of the event when all the particles are to the left of the wall. And you divide by Zn at infinity, that means when the wall is at infinity, there's a free Dyson gas. Okay? And okay, so then, Tracy and Widom, they did this, they showed that this is actually given by a Fredholm determinant and all this. So let me not get into that. So what, one question you can ask that, okay, so Tracy and Widom did their, found their beautiful distribution in 94. And since then, over the last, 20 years, you have seen that, the Tracy and Widom distribution appears almost everywhere, okay. So many different problems, random permutations to sequence, biological sequence matching problems, to KPZ, to so many other problems. So you can ask, why is it Tracy-Widom distribution so ubiquitous? Okay, some of these problems, of course, are related to random matrix theory, but some are not a priori obviously related to random matrix theory. And so one of the questions is that why is it so universal? Why does it appear in so many different, systems which are not a priori not related to each other? So now, if you are trained as a statistical physicist, you know that, usually when something very universal happens, we are always taught that there is a sort of critical point behind it. Okay. So, I mean, usually in critical phenomena, if you have a critical point, and if you go close to the critical point, and you know, you look at you know, things there, you know, more details, and then you know the details of the you know Hamiltonian and other things don't matter, and usually you know the scaling functions that come out around the critical point are universal, that is independent of the details of the model that you are studying. Okay, so that naturally motivates you to ask that, you know, is there a critical point here, okay, behind these problems? Okay, maybe that might be the reason why the trace medium is ubiquitous. Okay, so what is the critical point? How do you see a critical point here? You don't see an obviously critical point here. Okay, so in order to see this critical point, so in fact this idea sort of goes back to very early by a paper by Robert May in Nature in 1972, but I'll not discuss about that. But the main point I'm trying to say is that indeed you can actually view it as a critical point in the following sense. So remember this picture, I'll draw it here. This is the sort of most important picture. So we have this root 2. So lambda max fluctuates around this root 2. And this typical fluctuations is of order n to the power minus 2/3. Okay. And the distribution on that scale is the trace medium distribution. So in order to find, you know, what is the sort of critical point here, so what we looked at is the large deviation probability, and we'll see why this is a critical point. Okay, so you can ask, okay, so here is the same thing. So probability distribution, I mean, this is a PDF I'm writing in a loose way. So this actually has this trace medium distribution, which says this f of lambda max. And this is true when w minus root 2 is of order n to the power minus 2/3. This is typical fluctuations. Okay. Now, you can ask what happens, you know, if I ask, you know, what is the probability that lambda max is somewhere here? You know, lambda max is 0. That means what's the probability that all the eigenvalues are negative? Okay. Then trace medium distribution will not describe you that, because these are large deviation issues. So how do I, you know, describe this tail and that tail? So indeed, so you can actually compute this. So what you find is that if you take root 2, so if you take your wall W to be here, you know, and ask what's the probability that lambda max is less than equal to W or equal to W, so that means when this fluctuation root 2 minus W is to the left of root 2, so this is of order, let's say 1. So this is, remember, this is a scale of n to the power minus 2/3, and I'm looking on a scale of order 1. So then it actually behaves like beta n squared into some large deviation functions. I'll explain to you in a minute why is n squared and why in the other side is n. And there's a beautiful physics associated with this, so let me just, you know, explain in 1 minute what is. So these functions for the Gaussian cases, for Gaussian dynamics, so they are independent of beta, okay, first of all. And so they are computed explicitly. So let me just, you know, write it down. So, okay, so this is complicated function. I'll just write only one and then. Yeah, beta equal to 1 and 2. In general, more any beta actually. Doesn't matter. You can take a beta ensemble. Okay? So this is phi minus of W. So this is a result that David Dean and I derived quite some few years back. And then on the right side, you can also calculate this large deviation function explicitly. And there, it's actually half W square root of. So this result actually first goes back to Benaru's Dembo and Givenay. And later we are also computed by completely different techniques. Okay, very good. So we have these two functions. So what does it tell us? Okay. So first thing, okay, you notice that you know this phi minus function, if I plot, if I you know look at how does it behave as we approach this point W equal to root 2. From the negative side. So it actually goes like 1 over 6 root 2, root 2 minus W, 3, power 3. Okay. So this power 3 is important. We'll see in a minute. And similarly, on this side, as W approaches root 2 from the positive side, this goes like 2 to the power 7 over 4 by 3, root 2 minus root 2 to the power 3 over 2. Okay. And you can check that as you approach, you know, so if I'm on the large division regime, this is of order 1, right? So if I take the argument W to be very small, that means I'm probing this large division tail close to root 2. So it has to match with the left asymptotic tail of tracing term distribution coming from the inner, you know, typical regime. And it does match. If you just plug it in this behavior here, and you match to the left asymptotic tail of tracing, because tracing is on a scale of n to the power minus 2/3. So if you're looking at order 1 fluctuation, you have to look at very large negative argument of tracing distribution. And using the asymptotic tails of tracing distribution, you can see that these two, you know, regimes perfectly match with each other. And same thing on the other side as well. Okay? Now, what is the meaning? What's the physical significance of n square and n? Okay? And this is sort of important. So why is it n square here? Because what you see is that, so when this W, you know, so in general, this is the Wigner semicircle. They're happy. Okay? If the wall is at infinity, so imagine that bringing this wall from infinity. So as long as W is bigger than root 2, you know, nothing much changes. Effectively, the density remains the same as Wigner semicircular law. But when W goes to less than root 2, that means you are putting your, you know, computational wall here, which actually modifies this density. The density, so you are evaluating essentially this partition function and the saddle point. So this changes the density. And so you are pushing your gas of particles. You are just pushing with a wall. So it leads to a reorganization, a collective reorganization of all the particles. Okay. So in that sense, so this is actually a strong coupling phase. Because it requires, you know, a collective reorganization of all the particles. On the other hand, on this side, on the right side, when this is actually valid, when W minus root 2 is of order 1 on the right side, positive. So here, when W is bigger than root 2, if I'm here, you know, wall is here. So you know, probability that largest eigenvalue is 1. So here, if I want to look at those configurations, the configurations that dominate is that n minus 1 charges, they stay more or less in the Wigner semicircle. It's just one charge. You just pull out one charge from the C. And the cost of, you know, energy in pulling out this charge, because you see this is a ratio of two partition functions. So it's the difference when you exponentiate is the energy difference. So this is just energy required to pull out one charge from the Wigner semicircular law. And that's why it's of order n, because you know it's interaction of one charge with the n charges. Whereas here it's n square, because this is the energy required to push this Coulomb gas. So it leads to reorganization, and because it's every particle is interacting with every other particle, so the total energy cost is of order n square. So that's the significance of n square and n. And you know they describe the, so this is called the, so the right side is the pulled phase, where you have n minus 1 charges here, and just one charge you just pull it out. So this is your W, largest eigenvalue. Okay. So this is the pushed phase, and this is the pulled phase. And they have very different physics. I mean, one case is a collective thing, the other case is a single degree of freedom which dominates the physics. Okay? And so this is what we call the weak coupling phase. Now, where is the phase transition here? So the phase transition here, so again, you, as I said, you know, this is a ratio of two partition function. Okay? So in fact, if you take the log of this cumulative distribution, so if I take the log of this guy, so you see that on the left-hand side, it behaves like minus beta n squared, whereas on the right-hand side, it's actually much smaller. So if you take 1 over n squared and take the limit n goes to infinity, so this object, so this is just a physics-wise, log of p means log of the z by log of infinity. So that's a difference in free energy between the two phases, if you like. So this is exactly the interpretation of this left large deviation function, phi minus 1, for w less than root 2. For w bigger than root 2, this is actually 0. Okay? Because if I take the log cumulative distribution, this is the PDF. So cumulative distribution will be 1 minus this. And if I take a log, it will be exponentially small and goes to 0 in this limit. So this object, which is the difference in free energy, actually behaves like phi minus of w for w less than root 2, and for w bigger than root 2, it's 0. So if I plot this guy, why should I do it? Okay, maybe here. I'll come back to this. So if I plot this function phi minus of w versus w, you see this root 2, w equal to root 2 is like a critical point. So here, strictly in the n going to infinity limit, okay, so this is n going to infinity limit. So I have this function which vanishes as a power 3. Okay? Whereas the other side, so it's a third derivative which is discontinuous here, and it stays 0 here. Okay? So this is the critical point, that w equal to root 2, the location of the edge or the wall. So physics is that, okay, I'm bringing this wall from infinity. Basically, nothing happens till I reach this critical point. And then I push. And then, you know, everything has to reorganize and you are in this strong coupling phase, okay? Otherwise, you have, you know, elementary excitations which are like, you know, just a very, you know, this is called weak coupling phase because, you know, okay, technically in the field theory language, this means that the exponentially small correlations is because it's actually 1 minus, it's not a perturbative phase, it's actually 1 minus exponential of minus n. So these are non-perturbative excitations, whereas here, there's a perfectly 1 over n expansion of this free energy. And so this is the critical point. Okay. Now what happens at finite n is that, so these are the two phases, okay? This is the strong coupling phase, which is characterized by this phi minus of w, and this is the weak coupling phase, which is characterized by this function phi minus of w. Okay? And strictly in the n going to infinity limit, there's a critical point separating the two phases. Now, if you're at a finite n, so what happens here, so I'm plotting the same object but for finite n, not taking the n going to infinity limit here, is that it comes here, and then there's a crossover, and then it goes. So this is exactly the behavior that is noted here. I mean, it's just the integral of that. And so I should draw it with two different color. So this is the left, this is the right, and this white dotted line here is precisely the Tracy-Widom distribution. So Tracy-Widom distribution is actually a universal crossover function connecting the free energy of the two phases of strong coupling phase and weak coupling phase on the left and right. Okay, so that's the picture. So large deviations actually tell us these are the free energies, or even though they're probabilistically, they're very, very small, but there is a physics behind it, that they tell us that this is the free energy of this, you know, collective phase, and this is the free energy of this, whatever, the weakly, you know, weak coupling phase. And Tracy-Widom, indeed, you can view it as a crossover function at a critical point.
So why universal?
Yeah,
there are lots of things that could cross.
Huh?
There are lots of things that could
cross. No, it's just observation. It so happens. I mean, and then, you know, it turns out that at least many problems, so let me just put a list here. So So indeed, it's very funny because, you know, this third order phase transition was first worked out in the gauge theory literature. So there's a beautiful paper by David Gross, Witten, and separately by Warrior. So this is in the 80s. So this is called Gross-Witten-Warrior transition. So this was the first example I know where third order phase transition was found. So I'm not telling you this model. So this is a large N Young-Mills theory, gauge theory. So this is a gauge theory in two dimensions. In fact, what they had in their model, so this is, you know, so lattice gauge theory model, and they in their model they actually had this phi minus phi plus. They didn't have this, you know, connecting function. But then later, you know, there's people, other people, including David Gross and also Mathitsyn and other people. So they actually calculate the crossover function, and it's exactly the same Panleve 2 equation that Tracy and William found. Of course, they didn't have any probabilistic interpretation. Okay. So in that sense, it's a really universal crossover function. Okay. So then it turns out that, you know, it appeared in many, many different problems. So let me just list some of them. So complexity in spin glass models. So this is Fyodorov, Adal. Then conductance and short noise distribution. So in all these problems, basically, you have a Tracy-Witten distribution, and you have an associated third-order phase transition. Quantum dots. So this is a work with Bohigas, myself, and Bibu, 2008. And you know, there's a, you know, then there's this non-intersecting Brownian vicious Walker problem, where we again showed that this was a joint work with Forrester, myself, and Sher. And so, you know, many. So I mean, okay, if you are interested, I mean, there's a review that we wrote recently. So let me just give you the reference for that. So it's on the archive, or you can find it. Okay. And it's published in Journal of Statistical Mechanics. Okay, so where we actually, you know, discuss all these different models where you see the Tracy-Witten distribution appearing, and same thing, you have the associated third order phase transition. Okay, so now, you know, coming back to KPZ problem, so we know that in KPZ you have a Tracy-Witten distribution, the typical height fluctuation. So we can ask, okay, is there a third order phase transition? And the answer, of course, is yes.
Yeah,
sure.
Is it possible to tell
the
third order into second order?
Good question. Well, I don't know. I mean, it, you know, this is just an observation that because it has to do with, you see, the Tracy-Witten left tail also always goes like cube. Okay. Maybe you might have some other Panleve equation where it goes like square, I mean, Gaussian case or something. I don't know. So, could be possible. I don't know. One candidate is actually 1D Coulomb problem in a harmonic potential, but I don't know. So, okay, so let me, so in, okay, this another way of looking at it is to draw the phase diagram like this. So this is 1 over N. So N is the size of your matrix or whatever, the number of degrees of freedom in all these problems. And here you have this W, which is the, W is the largest eigenvalue. So the critical point is at W equal to root 2, and you have this phase. So this is a strong coupling phase. This is a weak coupling phase. So strictly, as n goes to infinity, so we have a third order critical point. And then at finite n, as you go from strong coupling to weak coupling, you cross over, and the crossover function is precisely the twisting term. So this is the strong coupling phase. That means this is exactly this. That this is the when you are here is described by this functional form here, and then you cross over to this, and then you go to the other side.
You call this third order just because when you do the large deviations, you have a cubic as you approach.
That's right. That's the third derivative is discontinuous in that sense. Okay.
But by that token, if you look at Poisson points which are restricted to lie in a semicircle,
mm-hmm.
then you also have the same lower tail. You have a cubic lower tail large okay. deviations, but the points can't end up to the right of the edge.
Sure. Yeah.
And you don't have a Tracy Wyndham distribution. You have a Gumbel type of interaction.
No, but the question is, is there a phase transition from a strong coupling to a coupling phase? That's the question.
Yeah.
So what I would expect is that if you do find a strong coupling weak coupling phase transition, then chances are that at least in all the cases we have seen, it's always the Tracy Wyndham. If you go to the critical point and enlarge it, you always find Tracy Wyndham distribution.
Well, it's possible I don't exactly know strong versus weak coupling.
Okay, so this is
But it certainly if you do condition these Poisson points all to the high to the left or something, it's going to change the.
Okay, so sure.
But,
no, that's,
but you don't have the Tracy Wyndham GUE.
Okay,
you don't have a weak coupling regime.
Well, so what is weak coupling? Depends what the criteria that we're saying in order to get this.
Okay, so
yeah, the conditioning is for identity interaction.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same conditioning you're doing, saying that you want to look at a lower tail for me. It's true, you can't have particles there.
Yeah, you probably cut it off at the other side,
okay, so you could put an extremely narrow decaying thing. There are different ways of doing it. I'm just not seeing.
Could be. The thing is that all the cases I've seen, if you have a smoothly, with a really critical point, connecting the two sides, and you have actually two sides. It's not that you cut off one phase at all. Okay. Maybe there are different, university classes of this critical point. I don't know. But at least in the cases when they smoothly connect as these things, you always find a Tracy Wyndham there, basically.
Yeah. No. I'm just looking to try to distill what the conjecture would be.
That would be very nice. This is open to any rigorous these things. I'm just talking completely just physicist observation basically. And this is not mathematically rigorous at all. Okay, so coming back to KPZ. So as I said, KPZ problem again, you have this centered height as this Tracy Wyndham distribution. And then it's natural to wonder, after this long motivation, it's natural to wonder that what the large deviation functions are and if there is a third order phase transition associated with it. And the answer is, as I said, yes. And we can compute the scaling functions, these rate functions explicitly for a few cases. And I'll just give you the results without details. So again, this picture is something like this. We have t to the power 1/3 here, 0. I'm looking for fluctuations of order t for large t. Okay, so there are two things. We can compute this in two cases. So one is two models. So one is a discrete single step growth model. Discrete time, discrete space. Actually, this was almost solved everything by Johnson. He didn't calculate this function explicitly, single step growth model.
Is this the same as corner growth?
No, I'll just describe the model. Okay, and the second is just the continuum KPZ equation. Okay. So let me just quickly describe this model. So Johnson's model is the following. So you have a discrete growth taking place. This is my space, discrete lattice. So this is origin. And so the growth takes, this is like a PNG, like a model. Basically, growth takes place in this like cone. So let me define h of xt. So this is the height at point x at time t. Time is discrete, space is discrete. And this is just, so this is for x less than t minus t. So these are the, so this is the time direction. So this is the x. So growth always takes place between x between minus t to plus t. And in the bulk, inside these limits, so h of xt is just the max of h of x minus 1 to minus 1. This is just a directed polymer model in a different language. So plus this eta of xt. So this eta of xt is a positive noise variable drawn from a exponential PDF. Okay. And at the edge points, so if I look at just h of tt, so there is just h of t minus 1, t minus 1, plus a noise. Plus t. And similarly, okay. So these edge points just grow like this. And
exponential, or you have geometric?
No, this is exponential, purely exponential. So this is not the, Johnson had discussed two different models in his shape fluctuation paper. This is the second model. Q goes to one of the geometric
points. Why do you say discrete time then? Why do you say discrete time?
Discrete time? The PNG version of that.
Yeah, this is just a PNG version of that. So if you look at this height, so at a given time t, let's say time t1, so you'll have, so average height is like this, and there will be fluctuations around that. These are, let's say, time t1. And then at late time, another time t2, so the average will be this, and the height will fluctuate around that. But you can calculate the average height. Johnson already calculated that. So this is just a function of x over t times t. So it depends on where you are looking at. Your x is a droplet geometry. And this function vz is just a semicircular form. So this is 1 less square root of 1 minus z square. Okay. So that's the average shape of this. And the height, of course, fluctuates around this average value. And, he showed, Johnson showed, so this is Johnson. So he actually showed that the h of xt, the typical height, and let's say I'm interested only at the origin, height at the origin. So h of 0t then goes to 2t. This is the mean value at this point. This is just z equal to 0, so it's 2. Plus this 2 times t to the 1/3 times chi 2. So chi 2 is the Tracy William 2 variable. So this is the typical fluctuations, this guy, at late times. And so you can actually ask, can one compute the large division functions here? And indeed you can, because there's a Johnson himself showed a direct mapping between this. So there's an exact one-to-one mapping between h of xt. So this probability is the same as probability that the largest eigenvalue of a Wishart matrix. Those of you who don't know what Wishart matrix is, okay, I can describe. But basically, it's some version of random matrix model with a Laguerre matrix. And so he established this relation. And for the Wishart matrix, we had calculated the large division function before with Oriol Bohigas and Pierre Paolo in this paper, before that, 2007. So we can just directly lift these results and calculate the large division function. So we'll just give you the results. And so basically the phi minus, so this object here, phi minus of z, is very simple actually. This is for z between 0 and minus 1. Why minus 1 limit? Because, you know, by when I say height, I'm defining the height h here as h of 0t divided by 2 minus t. So I'm centering like this. So since actual height is always positive, so h over t, which is z, has to be always bigger than minus 1. Okay. So this is the exact left function. And the right function is... z positive. And once again, so now the critical point is z equal to 0 is the critical point. Because the whole point is that, you know, when we're looking on this scale, I mean, in all these pictures, I mean, if I'm, this is order t fluctuation. So when I'm looking at order t, you see this width of this region t to the power 1/3, it's actually scaled down to 0. And that's the critical point. It's like in the random matrix theory. When I'm looking at a much larger fluctuation on that scale, but the typical fluctuations have gone, although the, you know, the point mass, the probability mass is concentrated there, but it's actually a point, basically. Okay? So the large deviation functions actually have the, they are like the analog of the free energies of the two phases. Okay? So this is this critical point. Yes? Yeah, I'm done. So, and then, you know, if you just compute this object here, you find that phi minus z, as z goes to 0 from the left side, it goes like mod z cube over 12. So once again, you have a third order phase transition. Because if you take the log of that and take the t going to infinity limit, it goes to 0 at the critical point with the third derivative discontinuous. So it's exactly more or less similar random matrix. I mean, you would have expected this from the random matrix connection, but here you can do it explicitly. And we also did it for the continuum KPZ equation. And there, of course, it's a slightly different technique. We used quite heavily for the left tail. So the result for the continuum KPZ equation is phi minus z is 4/3. So it's actually very simple. I mean, it's sort of so here it's not that, you know, unlike the discrete growth models, here actually the Tracy Widom regime in some sense, you know, holds for, you know, Tracy Widom expected to hold only for t to the power 1/3, but it actually holds for all t for the continuum KPZ equation. So the functions are exactly, you know, as in the left and right tail of the KPZ equation. I'm talking about only about droplet geometry. In fact, I mean, so for these to derive these results, so we use, okay, right tail is sort of easy and it's sort of already in some sense known, and mathematicians know about this, but the left tail was a bit non-trivial, and we used this beautiful theorem by Amit Corwin and Kostel, which is just the analog of the Pan-Leibniz 2 equation for finite t, the KPZ kernel. I'm not going to write down this, so you can read their paper. This is 2010 or 11, I don't remember. So we used their things to compute these left and right functions. So again, I mean this one, and the physics-wise, that you can actually understand why is e to the power minus t squared. In this case, it's much easier to understand in the Johansson language, because you see that, you know, if I want to create a height fluctuation which is much less than the typical fluctuation average, so height has to be very, very small. So that means in this growth history here, I have to have the noise and all this x and t variable, everywhere the noise has to be very small. Because if the noise becomes large at any point, immediately because of this max, you know, the neighbor will also become very large. So if you want to find a configuration where all the, you know, the height at the origin is very, very small, then, you know, if necessarily you have all these guys, there the noise there should be small. And for that to happen, so their noises are independent. So it's of, and the area of this thing is of order t squared. So that's why you see this is exponential minus t squared. Whereas if I want to have the height here at the origin to be very large positive, all I can do is to, in one way to do that, is to add noise at the origin, you know, continuously for time t, and you don't care about what happens others. And so, this is exactly like the weak coupling phase. You just, you know, pull the noise out here, you know, increase the noise here. Whereas in the other case, it's like a, you know, you have to collectively, all these guys have to be very less in order to produce such fluctuation. Okay, so that's the strong coupling and that's the weak coupling phase. And the same thing for the continuum KPZ equation. So one of the interesting open problems here is that what happens to the flat geometry? So both cases here are for the droplet case. So it will be very interesting to work it out, the flat case. And I should also say that the same, similar result you can actually derive for another model. This is, I would like to thank Calvert for pointing this out, which is the longest increasing subsequence problem. And this is a work which by Doshil and Zaitini. So they had actually computed, I mean, this was before Tracy Widom, so they didn't even know Tracy Widom at the time. But they computed the left and right large deviation function. And if you work it out, you find the exactly same third order phase transition again. And this was 1999. And so all the cases we know that, you know, again, the same scenario holds. That is the third order, there is a third order phase transition in this KPZ problem at late times. And you have this large deviation functions, and Tracy Widom is the sort of crossover function between the things. And okay, I mean, I'll end here, but I mean, just to mention that we also looked at the short time behavior. The physics there is quite different. What we find is that, you know, this, instead of this cubic tail here on the left side, we actually find a 5/2 tail, which is actually also was noticed for the flat geometry by Baruch Mirson and others. But this is, so there's a lot of interest in this tail business in KPZ, and so still there are a lot of nice mysteries associated with this problem, and hopefully this conference, this workshop will, you know, come up with more things. So it'll be interesting to find one model with the flat geometry, which where to compute this, but I don't know of any case. Yeah, not right tail, left tail I'm talking about. Yeah. So left tail is more non-trivial to compute. Okay, so thank you very much for your time.
Questions?
I'm not sure if these are far-fetched, but this structure reminds me of a way to approach the emptiness formation probability. The emptiness formation probability is a correlatory integrable system, right? Probability that you have no particles.
No, in the whole,
which is similar, yeah, the probability of having no
eigenvalues. That's how we basically, when, you know, Tracy and Widom, they computed their largest distributional eigenvalue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the random axis less than W means from W to infinity, there is nothing basically. Yeah. So
there is a way to do it in a similar istontonic way,
mm-hmm.
From a hydrodynamic point of view. And in that case, you understand the square behavior, the linear behavior, in terms of the fact that essentially you have an instanton and you can calculate what are the typical sizes of this instanton. And in one case, there is no other length scale except the one that that you said, which is t or n. In one case, in the other case, instead, one length scale is given by the fact that you have that scale, and the other one is given by the fact that you have in the time direction of of these evolutions an additional the length scale.
That's interesting. So, I don't know this literature at all. Maybe you should tell me actually.
Okay. So, yeah. Interesting. Let me discuss it.
Any questions? No? Okay, so.